Welcome to 1 in 7 on CHSR 97.9 on your FM dial. 1 in 7 is a twice-monthly show which will deal with issues relating to poverty. It is our hope to foster awareness and a better understanding of the problems associated with the fact that 1 in 7 Canadians live in poverty. This week, we are pleased to be speaking with Mr. Tim Blades via telephone in Halifax. Mr. Blades is a recipient of social assistance, so provides us with first voice experience of what it is like to live in poverty in Canada. Mr. Blades is also a poverty activist. He is co-chair of the Child Support Clawback Action Group, which is currently working to end the child support clawback in Nova Scotia, as well as being a member of the Benefits Reform Action Group, also known as BRAG. Welcome, Mr. Blades.
Oh, thank you, Kay. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. We appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to be with us. Let's start at the beginning. Can you give me a bit about your background?
Well, as you say, I'm a social assistance recipient. I've also been a member of the Benefits Reform Action Group for about 2 years now. I've also written about poverty and living on the welfare system for various outlets, including Nova Scotia Advocate. It was actually its founder, Robert Devitt, that told me about BRAG. I've seen a number of unfair things happen to family members and friends, and also myself, who are on the system. I feel it's important to speak up on how people are being treated while on the employment support and income assistance system.
And now your background, were you born in Nova Scotia? Did you experience poverty in your youth?
Oh, yes. We're going to talk a little bit later about the child support clawback, but I grew up without a father, and I experienced poverty. I was raised on the system. And even if I endured a lot of rough times because of poverty, and as an adult, I still suffer from depression and anxiety that I think stem from my childhood. And the most baffling thing is that even if my father had been in the picture and he wanted to contribute financially to my situation, even with the 100% clawback, it wouldn't have made a difference in my situation as a child.
Exactly. What advice would you give to someone who has to apply for social assistance for the first time?
I would tell them if they can to go online and read the ESIA policy manual, and if they can't get it online, to ask for a copy of it. Oh, ESIA, that's the Employment Support and Income Assistance Program. That's the official name of the welfare system in Nova Scotia.
I see.
And I would also tell them to speak to those who are on welfare and to speak to your doctor and get documentation for any medical issues you may have. And this is very important when it comes to submitting documents to the Department of Community Services. Always submit photocopies. Do not submit original documents.
Yes, we've all learned that the hard way.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell me about you referred a couple of times already to the clawback. Can you tell me about the 100% child support clawback? What exactly does that entail?
Well, if you are a single parent on the welfare system in Nova Scotia, you don't get a thin dime of child support. And I should mention now that until 2015, all jurisdictions across Canada had the 100% child support clawback for welfare recipients. But since 2015, BC and Ontario have ended theirs.
When you say child support, do you mean if, say, it's a single mother, if the father gives some kind of child support?
Yeah, if the non-custodial parent, usually the father, gives or is ordered to give child support, it either goes directly to the Department of Community Services through the Child Maintenance Program,
right,
or it goes to the recipient, and 100% of it is deducted from the recipient's welfare check. So either way, they don't see a dime of it.
Wow.
And in November 2016, I wrote an article that detailed how this isn't just a financial thing. It can actually put people in dangerous situations where a person might be asked to contact their ex, and in some cases an abusive ex, to procure money if it hasn't been paid.
Which, really? Yeah. So that they don't have to pay it.
Yeah. And on top of that, suppose that the money is being deducted from someone's check and the ex doesn't pay that month, the money is still deducted. And then the person has to either go to the ex to get the money or go through a process with the Department of Community Services. And I'm not 100% certain what the process is, but they have to go through a process to prove that the money was not paid.
My goodness.
Yeah.
It sounds very turn of the 20th century kind of policy.
It's very ridiculous. It puts people in dangerous situations.
Well, yes.
In my article, I have part of my article was written by a mother that actually went through this. She talks about the experience of having to chase down her ex and try to get the money up from him when he was abusive and go through all this rigmarole just for $50 at that time. And this was happening in the 90s, the example from my original article.
Right.
This is still going on today.
One would like to think that in 2018 the policies would change, but that's obviously not the case.
Well, there's always hope. People are speaking up and making noise now more than ever about this. It's just so wrong.
It sounds to me almost like victim blaming or something. I don't know. It's something, you're right. It has to change.
And about victim blaming is that there was a story that the CBC put out last year, or in 2017, that said that women will return to abusive relationships in order to avoid poverty. In my opinion, and I'm sure it's not just my opinion, I'm sure a lot of people would agree, in my opinion, policies like that force people back to abusive relationships.
That's a very logical conclusion.
Yeah.
Tim, there are a lot of myths about people who are on social assistance, that they're at fault, they're lazy, they choose to live that way because it's easier. We've all heard these generalizations, but there are also myths about what welfare recipients receive in allowances. Many people on welfare, they think, get much more money than they actually do. Can you share with us some of the myths about allowances that I've seen a lot of stuff online about, oh, they get hundreds of dollars for this and then hundreds of dollars of that for that.
Well, I'll tell you that if the welfare rates were what people thought they were, the province would actually be in a better position than what we are now, because poverty costs a lot of money. In terms of health, someone in poverty is more likely to be sick and become a drain on the healthcare system. So what we spend, whatever money we would spend out now in terms of solving poverty, we would more than make up in terms of less strain on the healthcare system, for an example. But to get back to your question about allowances, things like bus passes and bus tickets or commonly known as a transportation expense, and also a phone, are based on a medical need. They're currently based on a medical need. So if you want these things, you have to go to your doctor to get a note saying that you need these for a medical reason.
I'm a little confused, Tim, because I've often heard that, you know, the workers at social assistance, you know, they really want people to go out and get jobs. I think it'd be really advantageous if someone was looking for work to have a telephone. It's not a medical, that's not a medical issue. That's survival. So I don't understand why they need, it can only be for a medical reason.
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine on that, because I've been in a position where I had to get a note from my doctor, and the note literally said he needs this phone to make and receive medical appointments. And I know friends that are in a similar boat.
Now, I did a little bit of research on the monthly rate of rents in Halifax in 2017. And these are just averages. Some of them, of course, are a lot more. A bachelor apartment, which is very small, is $729 a month. A one-bedroom is $987. And a two-bedroom, so if it's a single mother with two kids, you're going to need two bedrooms, is $1,230 a month. Now, can you tell us what the basic social assistant rates for shelter in Nova Scotia are?
Well, I'm going to answer your question by throwing some numbers, the numbers that you requested, and plus some other numbers at
Great.
You. The shelter rates are $300 for a single employable person, $535 for a single disabled person, $570 for two people, or $620 for three people. There is also a personal allowance of $275 a month. A person might have a travel expense, either $20 or $78, a phone allowance, maximum of $30. There is no allowance for electricity or heat and hot water. Electricity, heat, and hot water are ideally supposed to be included in the shelter allowance of $535, $570, or $620, or as low as $300. With these numbers in mind, it's not hard to see why people are hungry in Nova Scotia.
Well, what I don't understand is, if the shelter rate is $300 for one individual, and they live in the smallest thing here, the bachelor, which is $729, I see that as sort of operating on a deficit.
Yeah.
Like, it's an unrealistic amount in the year 2017.
I agree.
Now, the shelter portion, like you say, of social assistance is $300 a month. When was the last time that shelter rate was increased?
At one point, I believe the employment support was separated from the income assistance program.
Right.
And a friend of mine who was knowledgeable with the system back then said that when those two programs came together, some people saw a rate increase and some people saw a rate decrease, and that would have been around 2001. But the rates that I just gave, the $300, $535, $570, or $620, people have been telling me that they're comparable to 1995 rates. And it's just baffling just to think that.
Yeah, I know in New Brunswick, when you look at the purchasing power of today's dollar for the what people receive on social assistance here, it's equivalent to like around 1970. So in 1970, when you were on social assistance, you had more buying power than you do today.
Oh, yeah.
And you know.
Inflation is not our friend.
No, it certainly is not. And it's obviously something that the governments aren't aware of. So do you think that the combination of day-to-day living expenses, like your rent and your power, your heat, and coupled with the inadequate welfare rates, it sort of forces people, do you think, on social assistance not to be able to, you can't eat healthily?
Oh, no, and again, I mentioned the...
You don't have money for fresh vegetables and fruits.
Yeah, that's true, and it gets back to my point earlier about the drain on the healthcare system, because you're more likely to get sick if you live in poverty. And it's just simple logic. If you can't afford to eat healthy, you're likely to get sick.
Right. But also, it's to be... For food insecurity, to be in a situation where you or your family are food insecure while you're on social assistance, it's very obvious to me that social assistance has to look at their rates. They have to be increased.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. We've been saying that for years now. Welfare rates have to be increased. The only way to solve a lot of these issues, all of these issues.
Yeah, because they are obviously not considering the inflation rate. The inflation rate isn't stagnant. It raises. It goes up all the time.
And we're in the process of a welfare reform here in Nova Scotia, and it's been quite controversial because the government maintains that they have more than adequately reached out to advocacy groups and to those on the system. And we beg to differ. As far as we know, the welfare reform that will come after years and years of planning will see a 2% increase for some people on the system and a 5% increase for others on the system. And 2% or 5% is not going to make a heck of a lot of difference when Nova Scotians are living 30-60%, Nova Scotians on the ESIA program are living 30-60% below the poverty line.
So also, what is the minimum? So the minimum wage in Nova Scotia, do you know what that is? How much it is an hour?
I don't know off the top of my head. We just had a small increase of 15 cents, though.
Okay, we did the same here in New Brunswick. Ours is now, I think, 10.85.
Yeah, ours we, I think, around that area.
So the minimum wage in both Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, it's not a livable wage.
No.
So if you find a job, you're probably still going to need social assistance, right?
Yeah, I've actually known people that were working. It's important to keep in mind that some people... Many people on the system are disabled and can only work part-time if they can work at all. So, and I've also known people that have worked full-time at minimum wage and needed help from assistance.
Well, I believe it with that minimum wage.
Yeah, and here's some more numbers for you. Currently, the way the system is set up now, if you were working while on the welfare system, you would get to keep up to $150 of what you make a month, and after that, above $150, everything is clawed back 70%.
Now I'm really confused, Tim, because if you're working, you can make up to $150 a month.
Yeah.
You can keep that money.
Yeah.
But if you get $150 in child support, they take off $150.
Yeah.
From your, I see a problem there. That's.
Thank you for saying that. I see the problem. I see a problem too.
You know, and personally, I think they should allow them to make a lot more than 150. But, you know, if they don't touch your check with that extra 150, they shouldn't touch your check if you get $150 in child support.
I would agree, and. To that point, I've been canvassing a petition. Me and some colleagues have been canvassing a petition to end the child support clawback. And I actually met a lady who presented a viewpoint that I never thought of, but I think it's very insightful. She said that she found, because the ESIA program classifies child support as income, and this is what she had to say about that. It's insulting to classify child support as income because to do so implies that she is working for her ex by raising their child.
Oh, that's an excellent point.
And I was just like, wow.
Yeah, I never looked at it that way before.
And I'm so grateful that she said that because I never thought
it's
of that.
It's sexist.
Either.
So the New York, the Nova Scotia government funded Feed Nova Scotia to in the amount of $12,000 in 2017.
That's outrageous.
And you pointed out in an article of that you wrote that I was fortunate enough to read that that's less than 1% of Feed Nova Scotia's annual operating budget.
Yeah.
So obviously you feel the government should be giving more, but what else can they do besides give more money, do you think?
I think it all begins and ends there. Like we need to raise the welfare rates. I think Feed Nova Scotia does an admirable job of bailing out a broken system, but the fact that there are so many welfare recipients who use food banks, that is a loud, clear voice screaming that the welfare system needs to be fixed. The provincial government needs to fix this welfare system and increase the rates to a livable amount.
Yeah, you mentioned food bank because of the rising cost of food, 50% of all food bank clients in Nova Scotia are on social assistance.
Yeah.
So that, again, is proof that they're not getting enough money.
You
very, very rarely, I don't know, I shouldn't say that's, let me rephrase that. I was going to say you very rarely see fresh fruit and vegetables at the food bank, but that's the case here. But I'm going to guess that that's probably the case there, that you don't get fresh vegetables except maybe potatoes or carrots and fresh fruit at the food bank.
I've heard people I know who are welfare recipients say that, yes.
Do you think there's also something that the federal government should be doing?
I've thought long and hard about that. I think that the Fed should really look at a guaranteed basic income for all Canadians. I think that raising someone's income level to the point where they can live with dignity and buy healthy food and take better care of themselves, it's not only great for the individuals, but it'd actually be great for our economy by, again, coming back to the healthcare system, the healthcare system, which is under a lot of stress as it is, it'd be under a lot less stress if we had less poverty.
Well, obviously, too, if you had a guaranteed annual income, we'd be able to partake in, you know, purchasing more things. It's all helps the economy, right?
Oh, exactly.
You have more income, you're going to buy more groceries, you're going to buy more clothes, you're going to buy more things for your apartment or whatever. So it's all good.
And coming back to the child support clawback, it was in the CBC, I believe, a week or two ago, that the child support clawback, if they were to end it, it would cost the Nova Scotia government $5.1 million. But alternatively, I would point out that currently having the clawback costs Nova Scotia parents who are living in poverty $5.1 million. And could you imagine, I'm not an economist, but the effect of $5.1 million being injected into our economy by parents who are spending it on their kids?
Very good point.
Yeah.
What do you think the general public can do to help, if anything?
Well, the general public, if you know someone that is dealing with the system, help them out. Speak up for them. Try to educate. There's a lot of stereotypes and a lot of myths about the welfare system out there that simply aren't true. And education is the inverse of stigma. The more we educate ourselves and the more we approach things with a compassionate view, the better off we'll all be.
Now, you believe that the poverty rates in Nova Scotia are quote-unquote unconscionable. Do you see poverty as a human rights issue?
Oh, absolutely. It's actually in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for their health and well-being of themselves and their family. This would include food, clothing, housing, and medical care and necessary social services. And of note, and a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, pointed this out to me, the DCS policy manual states the ESIA program will strive to provide residents of Nova Scotia who are in need with a level of assistance adequate to their basic needs for shelter, food, clothing, and personal care. And with all this in mind, this is perhaps the most shocking thing that I'm about to say. For the year from 2016 to 2017, the Nova Scotia Employment Support and Income Assistance Program closed that year with a surplus of $2.4 million.
A surplus?
Yeah.
Well, they're doing all they can.
Yeah.
Tim, would you like to add a closing comment?
Yeah, for my closing comments, to those on the system, if you're being mistreated, speak up, empower yourself. Like I said, I've been a member of BRAG for 2 years. I've met some of the best people I've ever met in my life by deciding to become involved in poverty advocacy. I don't regret it one bit. There are people out there that want to help and want to listen.
I want to thank you very much, Tim, for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure speaking
with you, and it's been a learning experience.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, too.
Okay. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We have been speaking with Mr. Tim Blades, a poverty activist based in Halifax. One in Seven's technician is Colm Lee McPhee, and I am your host, Kay Brookland. Until next time, this is One in Seven on CHSR FM. If you would like to access the podcast of our show, please visit our site online. Use the 1 and 7 in number form. The link is chsrfm.ca/1-in-7.